up, it's your boy Derek here at the Weekly Pools with my two best homies at the Tevin minus the I at Z13. Ricky Z, what's up, guys?
You know, the intros, they only get better and better.
Thanks.
I'm loving it, man. You know,
it's fine-tuned.
I thought after mine, you know, you guys would truly stick to your guns about making me do it, but, you know, that was pretty solid.
Thanks, man.
Bye. Ricky.
I'm here.
I feel like we haven't podcasted in a while. It feels like it was, like, a really long time ago, but it was, like, last week.
Probably because we were banging out, like, three episodes every 10 minutes for a
For real.
I was going through the episodes, and I saw, like, I saw an episode posted, like, every other day for, like, 2 weeks. It was ridiculous.
You were there. You know.
I was there.
You were going hard, man.
Yeah, we're grinding hard.
Hard
enough. Comics to read. Yeah, like Flocka. So we have a very special guest here with us, Mr. Cody Fernandez from Jack Irons, the Steel Cowboy. What's up, buddy?
Howdy, folks. Not too much. Just living the dream, I guess.
That's an authentic Texas accent, isn't it?
Oh, terribly authentic. It's so authentic, it's actually New Mexican.
Oh. Damn. So you're in New Mexico?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Damn.
And, you know, that was a good try, though. I was going to roll with the whole Texas theme with you, too. I had your back, and you were wrong.
Y'all are about to fucking play me.
I'm sorry that Derek has offended you so much about calling you a Texas person rather than a New Mexican.
Terribly offended, yep. Terribly. I'm broken now inside.
Excellent. We have a course that we make our hosts go through, you know, when they're offensive.
Yeah, you should have vetted that information before you just jumped the gun, Derek.
Hey, man, that's all I know how to do is fucking send it.
It's all right. I think I'll recover.
Cody, I'm not going to lie. So, long story short, real quick, when I first made my comic Twitter, like, before we even, like, did any of this shit, you were, like, one of the first accounts I followed because I'm a whore for cowboys.
But many folks are, and I'm glad. That's one of the things I really enjoy, and I try to do is to be an easy spot to go to. The Twitter landscape for comics has a lot of different faces, and I like to be a kind of a neutral one that folks can kind of come in and find some kind of footing and find what they like. Just from what I promo, I try to promote everything from everybody that I can, and I try and improve that space and give back where I can for what's I've been lucky enough to be blessed with.
Yeah, dude, you're fucking killing it. You're almost up to 7,000 followers, aren't you?
Holy cow.
Yeah, working there. I think we're working at 6,200 right now, and that's last 3 years. A lot of footwork. If you look, I think it's last time I checked, I was at over 180,000 tweets. So it's not in 3 years. So it's not something that just happened. I've gone viral once, and it was over Stan Lee's passing and how quickly they jumped on to monetizing him very quickly. It without a breather, that was my problem. But otherwise, no, it's just been groundwork and networking and connecting and exploring and just trying to figure out footing in what is essentially one of the biggest wild wests in art. It's really a crazy mix of personalities and a crazy mix of just work that can be put out in comics that's not put out anywhere else. And it's really exciting and can be trying to be in, but it doesn't stop surprising me, and that's why I've stuck with it.
There you go.
My man.
Yeah.
Tevin, you got a question? Ricky, you guys got a question? I got two in a row.
Nope. No further questions. Great podcast, guys.
All right. Call that
it up. Under 5 fucking minutes, nailed it.
Really nice, comfortable. Right. That's easy. I mean, back when I started, I was doing 8-hour podcasts. So let's.
This is a sprint, not a marathon.
Yeah.
Were you sleeping during these? What were you doing for 8 hours?
I was promoting my comics with no footing other than just being somewhere where somebody might come by and hear me. What I'm doing now.
There you go.
Just, again, a lot longer than 5 minutes.
That's longer than most men in bed.
Sorry. Yeah.
Wow.
Gore. That's always my goal. Longer than that. That's all that matters.
As long as you can get past 5 minutes, it's not as disappointing.
Exactly. You know, it's all a cherry and cream on top, as they may say.
Well, I'm going to be completely honest with you here for a minute. I didn't even hear your first question, Derek, because my internet is messing up where we have a storm going through. So what did you ask? If I can be reminded, because my internet is not.
Oh, well, I don't even think I really asked. I just really, like, confessed my whorishness for Cowboys.
Oh, yeah, I knew that information already. I mean, you were obsessed with Red Dead Redemption 2 for months. And it took me forever to convince you to buy it in the first
Nobody time. Saw me for 3 days.
For real. And I just tried to convince Derek for months to buy it, and he just was not about it. I was like, you'll love it. It's Cowboys. And when he got it, he was gone. So
I really love Jack Ironsteed.
I do too. And, you know, he's got some great nicknames, to be honest. I mean, I like Metal Rebel. Was that that's one of his nicknames, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. There's a lot of those. I started this in my teens, right? So it's about, 16 years ago that the Jack Irons idea came to fruition in my head. So a lot of that script is from issue number one is about from back then. So wow. You've got a lot more of that kind of less finessed takes on things, whereas, like, this is an idea, I want to jam it in there. It worked, thank goodness, and sticking with it. It did get refined, of course, over time, finding the artist and all of that, getting it done, getting the black and white digital is what we did first, and then I did some really terrible lettering on top of it. And that was up for a good 3 years, and I pitched that to publishers for a good amount of time. And I heard back from one tiny publisher that said they enjoyed the read, but it wasn't what they were looking for. But over 3 years and, 20 to 30 submissions, that was the only, like, even feedback that was received. So over time, after that, I was like, okay, well, I'm ready to do some more work. This is as done as it's going to go. So let me try and promote it a different way. Sweet. And I did it on Reddit for a little bit, just to get people to check out the free read on Topps, just so it got read, right? That's all I want to do is make a comic. Eventually got read. And somebody read it and really enjoyed it, and he was a letterer, and he's like, this lettering is terrible, please let me do something for it. I was like, what? Okay, I mean, it looks good, it looks fine, it's readable. No, I didn't know anything. This is baby Cody. I had no idea what the hell's going on for comics creation and all the different levels of artistry and teamwork and such that go into them. But anyway, he did that, put that together. We ended up putting that back up. And then I used that version of the black and white to try some crowdfunding. First one didn't go well. Got about $10, and then I joined social media. I did not want to join social media, but sacrifices are usually in order to get things. So that was the one, and so I just pushed and pushed and pushed, primarily on Twitter, what we were talking about earlier, and eventually got some footing around the right time in 2018, got the issue 2 funded. Through that process and networking, we were able to connect with the rest of the team, from our wonderful letterer, new letterer. There was the first guy, so diving into social media and diving into the comics networking scene, I'm going to call it, is There's it's politics. I can't say it any other way. It's 100% politics, and it was the part of this gig I was never prepared for and never wanted to have to deal with. But that's running a business. Anywho, so we found a killer art team. We got Matthias Laborde. He found us. He did page three of issue number one as kind of a pitch, and I ended up hiring him, and we made coloring issues one and two a stretch goal. And we've just been going from there. With issue two, we had to find another colorist because Matthias had to quit coloring because it just wasn't paying the bills. And we've been with Stephen Cannon for issue two and issue three. He does beautiful work on Maxie's lines. Maxie, that's another story. I could go off on the fruition of this, which I have on almost every podcast. So that's why I kind of leaned on it. But I don't know if you folks have any more direct questions. I'm happy to answer those.
You've been slamming the hammer on this anvil with this thing for a while then. You said your teens. How old were you think?
So the idea of a kind of trying to cram this idea of reincarnation into an immortal body was
that's one of my questions you're going that I have for
you. As you're going from childhood to teenagehood and being a teenager is that transitionary period of starting to understand adult concepts, societal concepts, the bigger questions. And that was one of my coping mechanisms. Going through that time was difficult and still stays difficult. So that idea was something I was like, well, you're stuck with history. And if you give up and leave, then that's not really, it's not a benefit. So let's explore the idea of a person who can't give up and leave and is literally burdened with history in the psyche as a person, as generational. And then I just wanted to cram a bunch of cool ideas I loved in comics. The Wolverine idea that's where I leaned. I started looking towards, I started reading comics around then as well, and I found out that comics is the medium where you can make any wild idea come to fruition. You're gonna have a harder time than a lot of the other mediums. And so I leaned in comics, found what had been done before that was similar to what I liked, and I dove into that. I got hooked on comics through Ghost Rider Road to Damnation by Garth Ennis and Clayton Crane, the most that I was a heavy metal kid, and that was the most metal thing still I've probably ever read besides like Murder Falcon.
And wait, Murder Metallica Falcon, or Megadeth?
Yeah, do you play an instrument too?
Okay, first off, I came into metal on Master of Puppets, so I love Cliff Burton. I'm a bassist.
Okay, there you go.
But
my question.
I leaned into Megadeth musically because I love the riffs and I love the musicality that Megadeth puts forward more than what Metallica kind of ended up doing after Master. So it's a toss. I like them both, but I am a Megadeth fan more than a Metallica fan, even though Metallica is the one who kind of brought me more into it.
I mean, once you listen to Rust in Peace, you kind of can't go back.
Honestly, it's tough.
When you hear those that album, and then Hangar In is just fantastic artwork. It just hits your ears beautifully. Like I don't know, Dave Mustaine just has a talent for ripping it. I mean,
oh yeah, no question. And he always gets the right musical talent to follow him for as long as they're willing to.
That's right.
I love that heavy hitting. Melodic. I mean, they're my version of thrash metal. There's a lot of thrash bands out there, but they're the ones who I kind of go to for that vibe if I want that vibe. Holy Wars, Angry Again, Sweating Bullets. I mean, there's so many so many good freaking thrash songs there. But again, as a teenager, when I was going through the emotional upheaval of going from kid to adult, metal was one of the leads. So Metal Rebel ended up in Jack, but so did a lot of the other things I was dealing with.
I mean, look, Sweating Bullets is a masterpiece that like nobody has really ever heard, and it's sad because Sweating Bullets, Blacktooth Grin, I mean, if you like Dimebag Darrell, that influenced him. I mean, Rust in Peace is one of those iconic songs that's in the background that everybody was influenced by, it seems like.
Yeah, they. I'm glad he's been able to keep Megadeth ticking along while being forced into Metallica's shadow. And when they're very different beasts, they're very different beasts. And I have, again, a great respect for both of them. I like Hetfield. He's definitely the guy I like out of Metallica. I like his story. I like how he his playing of guitar. I like his rhythms and songwriting. I like James Hetfield quite a bit. The rest I can give or take, but I understand how much they how important they are to what Metallica is.
Absolutely.
I like Poison.
We're gonna get on glam metal. I'm a fan of glam metal as well. Skid Row a little bit.
Fucking yeah, Sebastian Bach.
Yeah.
Skid Row is like legit. I legitimately like. I mean, it's not like I don't like Poison. I was just making a joke.
Skid Row. Brett Michaels, that. Right? That's his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brett Michaels is the Poison guy.
He had a TV show for a while, didn't he? What was that?
Yeah, he was Rock of Love. Show?
Rock and Love, that's it, yeah.
And he was on one of the Apprentice shows at one point, I think, too.
Yep. Yeah. One of, like, real quick off subject, like, one of my favorite Poison stories is, like, Slash tried out for Poison and, like, he didn't get it. They gave it to CC DeVille, and it's just like, damn, how different the world could be.
Living the rest of your life knowing you turned Slash down.
They'd have right. one less band in that era, because Guns N' Roses would probably not have happened.
No, oh no, absolutely not.
I don't know, like, Axl may have found some people.
Whatever.
I mean, it wouldn't have
Poison could Guns probably survive without them. Slash, obviously, but I don't think Guns N' Roses could survive without
him. No, that wouldn't have been an Appetite, and without Appetite, there's no Guns N' Roses.
Because, I mean, let's face it, I'll be that guy. That's their only good fucking album. I don't care.
Yeah,
there's a couple tracks that are all right, but yeah, Appetite. Yeah. It's pure gold, track to track to track. One of the last recorded on analog albums. It's just, Appetite is awesome. Yeah. But yeah, after that, it was all kind of downhill.
Right? Like, what the fuck was that Spaghetti Incident album? Like, who the fuck came up with that bullshit?
They were on so many drugs. So many drugs. They had roadies holding them up during shows at times.
Yeah. So yeah, like Derek, another like
so judgy.
Like, I'm sorry. Like another quick story. My part dad of the process. My dad met Axl Rose back in the day.
Oh, I remember this story.
So like, long story short, I don't remember the name of the dude, but I always just call him Bill for the story. My dad was friends with this dude named Bill in high school. And before Bill moved to West Virginia, he lived in the same town. I think is it Indiana? Is that where he's from? I can't remember. But he
sounds right to me. I do not know.
Bill was friends with Axl Rose.
Yeah, he's from Lafayette.
Yeah, Bill was friends with Axl before he moved to West Virginia. And my dad told me there was a time before I was born. Well, I mean, I don't know. It was about the time Lies came out, and he said he was at Bill's house working on his car, and like he said it was like a scene from a fucking movie, like fucking Axl Rose, like Rose fucking pulls in like a bat out of fucking hell in the driveway, gets out of the car. Bill, what's up, man? My dad was like,
excellent.
Was like, yeah, my
excellent
dad was like, he was
impression.
Burnt the fuck out.
Nailed so, yeah. Axl.
That's the story how my dad met Axl Rose. Yeah, man, what's up, Bill? All
right, so excellent. Piggybacking off of that, you also, didn't your dad give me and you an album that was in Zach Wilde's hands, right? Wasn't that?
Yeah, okay, so like another quick story. My dad worked with a guy who knew a guy who was in the music industry, and I have Suicide Silence's first album. That before it was even an album, it was burnt that Zach Wilde gave to my dad's boss.
That was then given to his dad and then given to Derek and I, and we listened to it.
Yeah, and I don't even like Suicide Silence that much, but it's still pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a dope story.
Zach Wilde plays guitar.
Oh,
Ricky, we're
is that
so
what
proud
he
of you. We're so proud of you, Ricky. You're involved.
I'm here to educate people.
Somebody's got to.
This is a house of learned doctors.
So what, the way I say Lafayette, is that wrong? How do you?
Yeah, that's
it?
Dumb.
You're from there, right?
It's well, Lafayette,
I'm not,
bro.
I'm not from. It's Lafayette, but I'm not from there. I live. I'm probably like an hour from there, but yeah. That's where, you know, West Lafayette, where Purdue University is in West Lafayette. There's a lot of people that I've met from other states that are like, Lafayette. Like, it's just say it like you're not smart. Lafayette. Done.
Lafayette.
Don't church it up, dirt. They have a Chick-fil-A there, and it's delicious. Great service.
Ricky's out here educating the world about Chick-fil-A.
I like food, man.
This is the first time I've ever been disappointed in you, Ricky. You let me down today. Yeah.
So, like, I, like anybody listening, that watched my video, whenever I put Jack Irons on my YouTube channel, like, I made the joke that he reminds me of Chuck Billy and Wolverine, and, like, I stick by that. The first time I ever saw Jack Irons, I was like, that's fucking Chuck Billy in a cowboy hat.
I never made that connection, but yeah, testify for sure. For sure. No, Testament was another one that hit me. They were doing a tour with Dio Sabbath. I think that was Dio's last tour. Priest and Motorhead. And man, was that was a hell of a show. And that was the first time I heard Testament. Formation of Damnation, and holy hell, that album. Oh, so then I went back, and there's some other stuff, but that album still hits me so hard right now. It's so well mixed. They're so heavy.
Yeah, dude. Testament's like my favorite fucking band to listen to when I skate.
Yeah, he rips it all the time in the car on our way to the skate park.
I'll be trying to like do a trick, and Tevin's like, "What do you want me to put on? Fucking Testament. Why are you asking?"
Yeah, it's either Testament or Pantera that we throw on.
Mm-hmm. That's another one, man. Pantera, Maiden, Metallica, and Priest kind of introduced me to metal, and then I went back and went forward. And man, when I hit Dimebag, that was life changing.
For real, you're speaking to the choir here.
Well, and Vinny and Rex and Phil, but. I mean, of course, Dimebag. It's so sad that we didn't get more out of him, but what we got was so good.
That's right. Another little aside, Derek and I were in a band together in high school, and I think we tried to embody that Dime and Phil lifestyle. I mean, Derek was bald.
Kept my head shaved bald because I wanted to be Phil Anselmo.
we used to be in the garage and we'd be jamming. I mean, we would headbang so hard, and Derek with his bald ass head.
I would fucking throw my back out, dude.
He would. He'd be so sore the next day. And
I wouldn't just like bang my head. I was like flopping around like a fucking wacky inflatable tube, man. Like doing my damnedest to slam my head in the floor while still standing.
Yes, it sounds like Anselmo. That fucker did that. He tried to break that stage every night.
Honestly. Like, I wanted to embody that, because fuck yeah, I love Phil.
It wasn't... I think they had the live music video for, what is it, Domination, where he jumps up in the air and, like, slams down onto the stage? I think it was Domination.
Domination, because that's the one where he's got the flannel on and shit.
Yeah, he's got like his blue jean shorts, and he just jumps really high just to slam down on the stage. It's what he
one of my favorites. I bought the Vulgar Display of Power 20-year anniversary when it came out, and they came with a DVD, and they're playing in Italy, and the camera guy's on Phil, and I think they're playing Domination. But he's sitting down on the stage just all nonchalant singing it, like with his legs crossed and shit. And like in between the verses, he just turns and he blows the biggest fucking snot rocket. And you can see it, like you can literally pause it and be like, yup, that's a booger. That's one of my favorite moments I've ever seen in my life.
It sounds like it should be up there. That's true.
Oh my gosh, I think we could talk about metal for hours.
No question. It was a huge inspiration for me to do any of this. I started with a band that didn't go very far.
And, what was your band name?
Sectarian Violence. Ooh. we were that. Yeah, and we were doing metal, but we were a little bit too soft for the name, which I think was kind of a interesting hook. You know, it made it hard to get gigs, but at the same time, it was different kind of musically than it. It's kind of hard to place. But, you know, we were teenagers, learned following, you know, a couple of parents who played music, that kind of thing. And so, you know, it has a drive. It was a good experience. Again, it got me that showmanship bit. It got me on stage. I still prefer being on stage to watching shows most of the time. Just the vibe is a little bit different. But, you know, that metal and that whole culture is what gave me the strength and the courage and the drive to try and put a big fuck you sign into this world. That's from me, signed Cody Fernandez. So, you know, it was super integral, and it's remains in my artistry with everything I write and what I try and put forward. It's that, again, bring back to that metal rebel biz, that anti-authoritarian strength that's always been very important for me, keeping my footing in this crazy ass world, and that'll always be in my work.
So I want to ask,
Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, quite literally.
I want to ask real quick, how did you find Wicked Publishing? When did you find them? And like, why the fuck aren't they bigger? Because they're putting your shit out and it's fucking amazing. Shout out to our homie Scott Kish over at Wrath. Like, their shit's amazing. Like, how'd you find these guys?
They found me. It was the same time around. I was running issue number 2's campaign. It was number 1. Well, it was just number 2. And I just wanted to get digital uncolored art. I just wanted to be able to pay Maxi again and move forward with the project. And that campaign went insane in terms of, like, I don't think anybody else has had a successful crowdfunder that adapted so much during the running of it and the in demand of it and everything. It was completely by the seat of my pants. I had to adapt again. We had to get a new letterer during that. We had to get another colorist for issue 2. Getting the colors, again, somebody found me during that campaign because I just wanted digital line art. And eventually Wicked found me. They liked what we were putting out. They're like, we can print this. Do you want this printed? Do you want to offer printed issues? And I'm like, oh, well, I didn't think about that because, you know, I just wanted to create more. I didn't think about actually that even being feasible, right? I had pitched it for so many years to publishers, and I was just like, okay, it's not going to happen, so I'm just going to carry forward myself. And so they found me. They offered that. We spent months on the negotiating the contract, and I was happy with their terms. I was happy with the folks, and I continuously am happy with them for again, as you say, they're not that big. The scale of operations that they're able to do for basically being just 2 folks, I've been very impressed with.
It's just 2 people?
Yeah, it's just Michael Watson and Matthew Bryant. And
hell.
Yeah, and this last one. So for the issue 3 campaign, they had – it was the biggest amount of books they've ever received. They received 1,500 misprints, which if folks have followed that story, you'll know how that goes. And we still have those, which is nice because they're readable. They're copies that we can do something with. Also just 1,500 issues, period. And so that was a huge influx for them, and they had to deliver – about 1,200 of those issues. So that was their first big delivery. At the same time, they were delivering a campaign for a book called Charger, and they were delivering Wrath Wrath issue 2 as well. And they got all that done in the couple months time span, which was incredible.
That's,
and again,
nuts.
For our last campaign too, for issue 2, that was their first real large campaign on that scale as well, and I think that was about 250 of each issue, so it was about 500 books they had to deliver for me. And that's part of what they do for us, is they are the fulfillment for us, and I I mean, I'm crawling through just mailing these metal cards by hand. I've done about 300 or so. I've got about 100 more to mail. But I couldn't imagine doing that, and they do it consistently. People get their books. They get them overseas, and just been a wonderful gift. And there's some other stuff with that first campaign that really was very kind, and it was a kind of sign-in bonus that a young first-time real kind of creator publishing their first work and getting it printed and stuff you probably don't get unless you somehow luck out with, you know, like Image or Mad Cave or Vault. But even then, you're still going to be likely fulfilling your own book. They'll just be publishing it and distributing it to comic shops. And so part of why they're not so big, so that'll answer the second question a little bit, is distribution has been hard to find, even with quality product. Distribution channels, like they're not monopolies, because there's a lot of different companies, but the big ones kind of, they have, it's not quite a quality standard as much as it is how do I say it without not so much a quality standard as it is, they have a very specific, I'm going to say, way of doing things, to be kind. There's another way to say it where it's they have, I guess quality standard is the best I can come up with right now off the top of my head, but it's you know, anybody who's seen our printed work, we exceed a lot of books that they distribute, even from large publishers. So that isn't something they can use. However, it's a case-by-case basis, right? You get an agent, and then somebody decides. There's different gatekeepers. That's been my entire experience with comics, is there's different gatekeepers, and you have to either appease, go around, or find another gatekeeper. And that's part of why they're not so big. It's been tough getting to a point where even some smaller distributors will handle their books. And I don't know if that's because of name recognition, if it's because of quality. A lot of time they just say no. They don't even give you, like, this is what we need. They followed and has walked through all the guidelines to get things done. So it's been interesting. It's been interesting. Hopefully that is actually coming to a head. I've been contacted personally by a couple smaller distributors. So hopefully that works out. But that's one of the reasons. You need that passive awareness, right? And for me, I've only had word of mouth and reaching out to folks like you and your audience and saying, hey, we've got this cool thing. You want to check it out? Whereas, you know, if our book was on a shelf, somebody will see it and see that there is a cool thing there and then hopefully pick it up. And so passive awareness is a big one why we're not so big. Honestly, a lot of the smaller publishers just have industry connections. They come from other independent publishers, or they come from the big two, or they come from, you know, different places, and they go to a smaller publisher like Action Lab or Vault or Red 5 or – I mean, there's a bunch of these publishers that are, I would say, about the next step from where Wicked is, right? They're distributed, they're put into comic shop, but they still don't have the shelf space that, say, Image has.
Right.
And it's all of that. And there's this mentality in comics which pervades and is such a massive cause of almost all the issues and the problems in comics, is that this pie is too small for everybody to have a piece. And they, a lot of the business ends of these places act accordingly instead of trying to grow the pie. And, that strangles a lot of smaller publishers. And that's why you're seeing even big creators now are like, oh, well, I don't really even need you, do I? With this whole Substack migration and this, I mean, it's not talked about the same way the Image migration was, but it's got a lot of the similar things. It's just less of a middle finger to the industry than the Image one was. And I'm very curious what that'll do if these creators are able to get a strong footing under themselves. Then comics publishing in general is going to be very, very different. And it's very exciting because then it puts the power back into creators' hands, but it also puts the responsibility back in creators' hands. So it's going to be more and more competitive because more people are going to be looking at this small pie and less likely to put the faith into growing the pie, the faith required to do so. And it's going to be more and more competitive. So I'm hoping I've done my best to network and to find folks who I appreciate, who inspire me, who I want to see grow and to support their work and to keep pushing forward. And hopefully the positivity and the opportunity will outweigh the competition. Because, I mean, comics is a very unique medium in that it's one of the very few where almost every comic reader wants to be a comic creator or has an idea for a comic. Whereas not every movie fan has an idea for a movie. Not every novel reader wants to write a novel. Comics is very unique in that almost every consumer is possibly competition. And so you got to kind of look at it as either like that or you look at it as you're sharing in this big experience and let's see how we can grow it together. So I try to do the second one.
So real quick, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to run a quick Kickstarter ad for our boys over at Omen Comics. They got a new comic coming out, Elaium. No, I don't even know how to fuck to say it. Sorry, guys. Elaium, number one, coming out soon. Check.
Hi, I'm Steve Sellers. I'm a writer for Omen Comics. And today we're going to talk about our Indiegogo campaign for a comic called Guardians of Elaium. So what is Guardians of Elaium, you may ask? Well, Guardians of Elaium raises a major question. Is there a crime so terrible that atonement is impossible? Is it possible to come back from that kind of sin? Guardians centers on seven people who have done this. They're living in Roman-era Jerusalem. And through a series of events, they end up killing a god. Their leader, Marius, struck the blow that killed him. And this ends up wounding the Elaium tree, which is our version of the world tree from Norse myth. And this causes damage to time and space. The Guardians are tasked by the angels to go through time and space and fix the damage they've done to time. In the Omenverse, all myths are true, so we can go anywhere in mythic history. So along the way, we'll see places like the Trojan War, Arthurian England, and more. Our artist, Tazen Awashika, has been killing it on these pages so far. Tazen does all of our books, and he keeps getting better and better on every project he does, from storytelling to visual details. The inks are all done, and I hope you'll agree that Tazen has more than earned his money on these pages. Guardians of Elaium will be on Indiegogo if you'd like to support us. We hope it'll be worth your time and money. Thank you for listening, and until next time, I hope we'll see you in the Omenverse.
As they rely on their own teamwork, so do we at Omen Comics. And our main team member that I want to focus on is Tazen Awashika, who is providing the artwork for the series. And Tazen on this book continues to get better and better. Every Omenverse book that he's done just continues to improve. And I'm sure that the same is going to be true for Guardians of Elaium. Everything that I've seen from him so far has been outstanding. And I'm sure that when you see the finished product, it is going to be only being better and better than that. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how you react to it and, you know, how much you end up enjoying it. And so I hope that you'll go to Indiegogo, you know, look over the project, and I hope you'll support it. You know, thank you very much for your interest and your support. And until next time, this is Steve Sellers with Omen Comics, and I hope to see you in the Omenverse.
Check this out. So I heard through the grapevine that Wicked might be in talks with Diamond. What do you know anything about that?
Not that I'm aware of. They have tried a few different publishers, but not that I'm aware of personally, but I'm sure I'll find out.
Yeah, I've heard through the grapevine. Ricky, you're awfully quiet over there, buddy. What's going on? You okay?
I just wanted to ask Cody if he felt, you know, kind of bad because we just prioritized somebody else's stuff over his. And I just, you know, I thought Derek just doesn't care about Cody that much. And I was going to make a joke about it. And then I was like, nah, it's okay. I'll leave it alone.
Oh, no, it's no worries. I've been
I'm kidding.
Gabbing. I've been gabbing like crazy. Well, that's the main thing, is to make the personal connection at the end of the day. Then if people are interested, hopefully the work will speak for itself.
And they should be. Jack Irons is super fucking cool. Three fucking issues. You guys have a fucking fantastic art team. You're out here fucking writing this amazing story about this great character. And I just want to say, too, I feel like it's really hard to write a story around, like, one character, I guess, and, like, make them iconic. And, like, I feel like you have something here with this.
Yeah, why do people say that?
To add the fact that you're putting in reincarnation into it, you know, that's such a beating a dead horse with a stick concept, but you've refreshened it. Like, you've made it something new that a lot of people just they can't seem to do with reincarnation. And I don't know why, but a lot of people get it just bland and boring. You know, they're back. But there's something with Jack Irons here, just with issue one, that there's more to it.
And let's face it, most cowboys just end up with TB and dying in the desert, and he can't do that.
That's right.
Nope, neither of those things can he do, even if he really tried.
I mean, I guess he could get TB, but it's not going to kill him.
No, and it probably wouldn't last. Issue three, I showed kind of how his immortality is basically the will of the universe. It keeps him stuck, is the best way to say it. We're going to be exploring that this whole next arc. I'm really excited. Issue four is more of a classic adventure, which people have kind of wanted. And then five, we dive more into the reincarnated bit, like hardcore. It's more of a psychological exploration in issue four. And then five and issue six, I'll let that one speak for itself when it comes. But really excited for issue four. Just because it's a different take. I took an old Eastern story and, as you said, put a new spin on it. So we'll see how that works. Like, reincarnation is a pretty worldwide concept. It comes up, but the East really turned it into a thing, right? And so I'm exploring that real deep in issue four with again my own kind of take on an old Buddhist story. So I'm excited to see if anybody actually catches what it is and what I'm doing with it when we make it. And hopefully that will be by the end of this year. We'll be starting on it. I'm really hopeful.
So you say it's the will of the universe, right? So is the universe, like, constantly wanting him to die? Is that the only way that the universe could move forward?
No, his immortality, not his reincarnation. Is a different facet. No, his immortality is basically just his matter can't be – it can be destroyed, but it re-exists as if it wasn't. We showed it in issue three. It's just a big puff of light. Yeah, it's the same. It's the same mechanisms that manifest.
Yeah, he keeps consciousness through all of it.
It just happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I really love his fucking horses with the motorcycle.
Yeah, that was
another silly teenage idea. I was just like, you know what? It would be really cool to have two fire-breathing horses on the front of this motorcycle attached by chains. I was just thinking metal, you know?
Like Todd McFarlane, fucking kids love fucking chains.
Exactly. And I was one of those kids, and I wanted chains, and I wanted robot horses, and I got both.
Do you have a chain wallet that you used to? Velcro chain wallet.
Velcro.
Nice. Look at that right there.
Oh, damn it.
For those of you listening, Cody is on video and he showed us he does have a chain wallet. It's real.
I do.
It's fucking real.
I think, Cody, that goes back to what you were saying before about, like, seeing cool stuff and wanting to grab it off a shelf. So if this book, to me, if I saw it in a store on a shelf before Derek or Tevin, whichever one you sent it to me, if I had just seen it on a shelf, the art by itself, the character layout, the design of how Jack looks and all that cool other crap, like if I'd have done a quick flip through, I'd have grabbed that right away just because of the look of it alone, like you said.
Yeah,
retweet.
There's nothing else on shelves like our work right now either. DC stuck its toes in a weird Western the end of last year with Ginny Hex, didn't do anything.
It's funny you mention that, because it's when I started reading it, which it's possible because I just watched the second episode of What If, so I was kind of already thinking of Josh Brolin. But right away, when I started reading Jack talking and looking at him, I thought of Josh Brolin because of Jonah Hex.
Yeah.
his voice, not because of the character or like what he's doing, just I'm like, his voice would work really nicely here.
Yeah, that's always been he's been one of my thoughts because of Jonah Hex for one, but also just Josh Brolin's got that kind of gruff.
Yeah, he's got that
sound to him. You know, I mean, he pulled off Thanos. It works. Yeah. It's an interesting journey. It's been an interesting journey, and I'm excited to continue it. Issue 3 was a big milestone. It was one of our hardest fought to succeed ventures so far, and it reached the most folks. So I'm very glad for that. I'm hopeful again. If those whispers, those rumors are true, that would be quite excellent to see Jack on the shelf next to some other comics. Because again, as I said, you're going to be looking at 46 different Batman titles. Jack's going to look a little different, and I think that gives an edge a little bit. And
yes, for sure. Because I'm telling you, I can feel it in my guts, and it's not poop because I did that before we started this.
Okay? Oh my gosh.
Like, if you put Jack Irons in the comic book store, I guarantee you they would fucking sell that shit out.
Yep.
For sure. That's the hope. I mean, we got him. I mean, we've by ourselves with our own efforts, we've sold about 2,000 issues between all three. So that's pretty good for an indie comic, a small scale.
For sure.
And the continuously export, and not just that, right? We were selling two comics for $25. So it's also the price scale is a little bit different. So I'm really hopeful because I mean you buy into a lot of different things. You're making the thing happen. You're supporting me as a creator, of course, and you're supporting our team, allowing them to get paid and do this and actually live a comfortable life doing what they love to do. But it's also just that $5, $4.99, something like that. I mean, comics are pretty expensive these days, but for 32 pages, or as we do 48. For a single indie book floppy on the shelf, I think that's competitive.
Yeah,
and I would like to see it try. I would like to see that competition happen and see what happens. Again, yeah, I can't Redemption by AWA is the weird Western I've noticed that's come out, and I have no idea how well it's done sales wise, but it was at least something on the shelves that was kind of like Jack, but I think it was a limited 5-issue series. So Jack is an unlimited series. I purposely made a character with unlimited potential from all angles, whether going far into the future, far into the past, different lives, different explorations, different tales within the different factions. This Ironverse Comics, what ended up being called Ironverse Comics, is a massive IP. It has gold everywhere that just needs the money to buy the tools to mine it. And we're
you
working.
You just need again. A home. You need not dissing Wicked at all. Like, they're doing some really fucking good shit.
Yes,
at the end of the day, you've sold 2,000 comics through crowdfunding. That's insane. Because, like you said, they cost a lot more. And me, as a consumer, it's hard for me to want to, back this Kickstarter and do this and do that. Because, money's tight. I'm not a fucking millionaire. I'm out here fucking doing everything on my own dime. So, for you to have sold that many that way, that's fucking nuts.
That's why I never forget my blessings there. These people, and not only that, right? So with Indiegogo too, you're charged right away. So that money's gone right away. It's not like Kickstarter where you're not charged unless it succeeds. That money's gone right away. You don't have access to it anymore. You're trusting me to, use it properly and to get you what you're doing. So on top of, you're not even just buying a comic. It's insanity that I've been able to get here, but it's just the paths and folks I've met and the places I've metaphorically traveled and the things that we've been able to do because of this faith and because of honoring it and playing with it and doing the best we can to grow it. No matter where these things goes, I've been incredibly blessed, and it would be I'm hoping, you know, as a lot of our fans say, you know, there's an incredible amount of potential. You just got to get in front of people. So I'm hoping that that really is what we're missing, you know, is just getting it in front of more people, whether passively or actively or however to get it in front of more people. And if that's true, then we're just buying time and learning what we need to learn in the meantime, right? But if not, I'm still learning and growing and creating. So it's no matter what, I'm winning.
Retweet.
Absolutely.
I think you got a good formula. I mean, I think the book has a lot of appeal. Obviously, we've talked about the art. I love the art. Just in general, like that massive barbarian Spartan looking dude in issue 2 was flipping cool. So just the different ways that you're kind of telling these stories. It's weird because it's a Western, but you're not really just a straightforward Western. You're talking about a whole bunch of different stuff all throughout history and way into the future, but still keeping some of those Western tropes. Like the little bit about gunfire indoors, that's kind of like one of those things, you know, a lot of the like older movies and shows is like, you know, if you come into the saloon, you take your gun off kind of thing. It's just that kind of stuff where it keeps it kind of centered around Western, but also it's not at all. So how can it, it's completely not a Western, but completely a Western at the same time, which
yeah,
is really
without, cool. without losing like, so Firefly did it pretty well as well. They kind of kept it in space and still felt like a Western, going through the, instead of going through the prairie, going through space. Instead of, you know, native raiders, you had those cannibal mutants. It's good world building that allows this potential, but it's understanding the story you want to tell that actually gives it the footing to travel that potential. And Jack's voice is what makes it a Western. It's how
Billy.
I went in with the goal of making a modern folktale, and I grew up in biker culture, which is, you know, a slightly more modern cowboy. So I've seen these, again, with this theme of reincarnation, all this, I've seen these thematics, these ideals, these personas reincarnate, take different forms through time. And so it's really easy to make those timeless because they are timeless. And so you can put on whatever hat and then move it through whatever time you need it to and still have that Western feel. And it just needs to have Jack's voice or a similar kind of voice. And just got to have the right vibe, right? Mad Max isn't quite a Western, but it's kind of a Western. Particularly like Thunderdome's closer to a West classic Western than Road Warrior, but there's still that Ronin movie feel, that lone folk hero walking into town solving everybody's problems and walking out back into myth. That's supposed to be Jack's kind of deal. And
is mayonnaise a Western?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
No, you got a good thing going. I mean, like you said, it's thicker books. There's a lot of pages going on here. There's a lot of dialogue, which I like. Obviously, there's a limit. I know I've seen people recently on Twitter complaining about too much dialogue in books, but I'm kind of like, get over it.
It depends. It depends how it's handled.
I guess. I didn't see he'd done it too, but I didn't see if he said anything, but I've just been seeing people complaining about that. Like, oh, we don't need all that dialogue. And I'm like, well, you kind of need both. You need a lot of art. You need a lot of words. And that's how it works. And I liked the quantity of dialogue. There was a lot to read and a lot to look at. So it really had the whole package. And like you said, you're talking about bang for your buck. You got thick books. And I liked, like in issue 1, there's all that extra art at the end. That looked like a Kickstarter book or like you said, Indiegogo. I didn't realize that's how you had done it. So you said it, but it makes sense now. But yeah, and you got good humor, even like little bits. It's not like it's a hilarious. It's not meant to be, but there's like little, like that guy was like,
you gotta breathe when you're slitting throats.
They're playing like cards or whatever they were playing in that bar, and he was like, don't lose your heads. And then the next panel, the guy gets his head blown off. That was funny. Like it just made me laugh.
And it was during a bunch of exposition, right? That was my one way to get through all this world building that Jack's just yapping at you. The first three issues, the framing device is him being him drinking at a bar. Now he doesn't get drunk, but him drinking at a bar a whole lot, just talking to people, being the folk hero. And I wanted this vibe to be a little bit of drunken rambling. So there is more dialogue and more kind of rambling, meandering kind of thought processes in the first three books than will be in the future, because that was how I wanted to set the stage. I wanted to have that Western hero recounting his war stories. And it's kind of a Forrest Gump thing too I was going for. And it worked. It was clunky for some people. Some people definitely prefer more movement. They prefer action to be the driving force. But that wasn't the goal of the first three issues. The goal of the first three issues was this guy walking up to you, sitting next to you and drinking alongside you, and he will not shut up. Right. And that
everything's
works.
Everything's not for everybody. Some people like their Sprite in a can. Some people like it from McDonald's. One's a little more spicy.
This is true.
It seemed like a good book too, as far as like the marketing of it, to reach a pretty broad audience. It's not a kid's book at all, but I mean, like it didn't. Now maybe I don't know your plans for the future, but it didn't get too crazy intense with like adult themes. It kept it kind of moderate, where it's like a teens and up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like where, for me, like I think about what I'm going to be reading as my kids grow, right? Like what is nerd dad going to read with his teen kids, and what we can talk about and hang out into their adulthood and stuff. And, I mean, the book for me, anybody listening, if you're looking for something like that, it fits the mold, at least through these first three issues. Like I said, it's not for kids, but it's got a good broad range of readers that could really enjoy this.
Yeah, we use very sparse far language. I think issue three we said shit, and issue one and two I don't really remember any.
Issue one and two had like very PG level language, like nothing crazy.
Yeah. But gore, I wanted to solidify horrid stakes. So that's what we did. You know, again, one of these things going from childhood to teenagehood to adulthood, that transition into the reality of things. And you can be polite about it, but at the end of the day, there's some pretty awful. And so we didn't want to really pull the reins back too hard on that. But yeah. I'm not going to be exploring like hardcore sexual themes or like, you know, cussing things out like maybe a Garth Ennis book will do. Unless there's really cause for it, but it's not the kind of story I'm telling. I'm just trying to tell something somewhere in between Fistful of Dollars and like Road Warrior, something in between those, you know, that kind of PG action to the more hardcore R that has some nasty shit in it. Somewhere in between that, like kind of what the modern, and another huge influence was Samurai Jack, the fifth season of Samurai Jack kind of was, where they went with that gore and that edge and the psychological exploration and the horror, but they didn't make it an actual what we would consider an adult cartoon these days. That was great to see. Samurai Jack was a massive influence, one because of the samurai Western influence, that's just inescapable. But the whole taking a whole bunch of cultures, putting it into one person to fight a manifested evil. And that's Jack also. That's Cowboy Jack as well. And yeah, so if you folks are also fans of Samurai Jack, this is kind of what I was doing.
Oh, it's Kevin Love.
It's my spaghetti Western version.
Yeah, it's great. Look, Samurai Jack is like my favorite cartoon from my childhood of all time. It's right up there with Ed, Edd n Eddy. Like both of those are top tier cartoons for me.
The size of those jawbreakers is ridiculous. It's so unrealistic.
They break your jaw.
Their squirrel cheeks are impressive.
Dude, so I'm just out here trying to eat a like mattress.
Are you in the 2001 Samurai Jack, or are you talking about the reboot with Adult Swim? Both?
It wasn't a reboot. It was a continuation and finished it. I was talking about both, because it's both, the same work. It's just they adulted it up.
I was going to say, they kind of rebooted it with made it more geared towards adult, because we're the ones who
watched
that.
It.
So
exactly.
So they're going to market it towards us, of course, as we've grown, our tastes have grown. So, you know, they revamped it and made it a little bit more adult, of course, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They injected that psychological horror. He also became immortal in that fifth season, which was surprising me. I had already done Jack for a while, where he wasn't aging anymore. They injected the blood, and they injected him beheading actual people instead of just always being robots that he's cutting. That first issue when he slays the robot with Jack. Jack Irons. That was my homage to Samurai Jack a little bit, and then I threw in the Unforgiven line with the RoboCop line, and that was kind of me trying to, you know, I know what Giants arena I'm stepping into, and so I want to honor it, I want to respect it, and I want to show I love it, and that's a lot of what we do at Ironverse Comics entirely, but what I really try to do with Jack Irons Steel Cowboy.
I find that quite dope.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't want to be totally like unmetal here, but every time you say Steel Cowboy, I think of the Bon Jovi song Dead or Alive.
A lot of people do. There's also a trucker called Steel Cowboy. And then Jack Irons was the original drummer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, so I get all of that.
So, hold on. Are you telling me that Bon Jovi isn't heavy metal?
Bon Jovi's like the Justin Bieber of the 80s.
That's so true.
King of the county fair.
I met him, though.
You met the Bon Jovi?
I met the Bon Jovi and his son.
Little Jovi.
Yeah, he was all... I used to work at the airport in South Bend, Indiana, which is near Notre Dame. And his son was... I think he wound up going there, but he was attempting to be a walk-on, I think, for the football team. And I met them Rudy there. Yeah, he was a little taller than Rudy, and he was, you know, athletic. So I'm not taking shots at Rudy. My dad would be very offended by this. But a lot of
be mad that I called Bon Jovi Justin Bieber.
No, I don't care. He's I don't think that's a fair comparison, but, you know, whatever. I mean, selling millions of
you're
albums.
Right. Bieber was yes, more.
They could be compared similarly because they sold massive quantities of albums and they were pop-level famous. But he was a tiny good, person, you know? Bon Jovi was. When I was like, I'm not a big guy. Yeah. I was
Bon Jovi, if you're listening, we're not sorry.
he came in a couple times, and one of the managers was like, well, she was would have been probably 18 when he was blowing up, and she was could not like she was the regional manager, and she couldn't even talk, she couldn't be around us, she had to like hide because she was so beside herself that he was coming, and that was when he was coming in a more like cool guy setting, so he flew in on a bigger plane and, you know, was dressed a little different. But he was super cool and nice and whatever, and she couldn't even talk to him. I'm like, holy crap, lady, calm down. And then the next the next time he showed up, he was just in like a hoodie and jeans and flew in a way smaller plane, and he was just like, oh, hey guys, what's going on? He was super nice, but he was like, he wasn't very big. I guess he was like 5'8", something like
that.
Did
he even lift Bon Jovi?
I was like, you're a short guy, but you never can tell because he's always up on that stage.
Not work for Dio.
Yeah, Dio's different though because he's metal. They dress. Dio they all wear leather.
Pants. Little metal.
I mean, you God, don't call yourself. Leather pants. You're not in a band called Elf when you're 6'2". You know.
That's true.
You can't be in a band called Elf being that.
No, it doesn't work. Doesn't
Will
work.
Ferrell was an elf. What about the Lord of the Rings elves? Are you out of your mind?
They're all little. They're all tiny. They're all tiny.
The elves in Lord of the Rings are gigantic.
No, hobbits are just really, really small.
The whole point of the elf Will Ferrell movie is that he's not an elf.
How dare you?
He's not. Doesn't he cry about it? Like, come on.
He does cry about it. It's the whole premise of the movie. But still, words hurt.
Weaponized words.
We do this little joke. My sister did. My brother, he's like 6'3". I'm like the tiny baby now. I don't know what happened. And he was complaining about how, like, he's like, sometimes I don't think I'm good at stuff or whatever. And my sister pulls that line from Elf and was like, well, you can change the batteries in the smoke detector. And it made me laugh so hard. It's funnier if you know them, but it was, you know, whatever.
So Cody, when does the Indiegogo for issue 4 go live?
Oh, I'm playing it by ear right now. I'm really hoping to have about 4 pages of the inking done before we launch. My hope is early September. At latest, it should be mid-September. And we've got that pre-launch up right now. We broke about 107 signups, which is wonderful for how short it's been up. That pre-launch
I'm one of those for over a month.
All right. Thank you so much. And if folks sign up, we are we're going to give a secret perk out. That'll be a discount. I'm trying to simplify this campaign compared to last campaign. So we're not going to have as many bells and whistles. If you want those, they're always available through IronVerseComics.com. We got all kinds of merch. So we're trying to simplify it, trying to keep the goal as low as possible while also raising the standard for our wonderful art team. So we're going to see how it goes. It's going to be I think we need to sell about 500 copies, which is from all signs should be very possible. However, we did run a Kickstarter earlier this year for a hardcover collection of 1 through 3.
Woo!
That was we got to 79% funded, so we got $6,900 or so on it. We needed 10K, and that was, I think, from about 270 people, I want to say.
That's really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good numbers. And if you're working with different budgetary constraints than what we do, it's totally doable. And I'm very, very happy about that. But with the budget and how we take care of our art team, it's a little bit more difficult. We're paying above industry rate at this point because the industry rates are complete shit, and nobody should be willing to work for the rates that they give these people. But
way to go, Bernie Sanders.
Well, I mean, yeah, again, fight the damn machine. But at the end of the day, it's gonna be a hard fought battle, and I've known that since the beginning. I've got a surprise that's going to happen about 2 weeks into the campaign that hopefully will synergize with it, and hopefully that'll give some good grounding for people who are new and want to also jump onto issue 4.
Me, the surprise is you called Chuck Billy and you convinced him to cosplay as Jack Irons.
That would you see now anything I do is ruined.
Way to go, Derek.
The bar too high.
How dare you? No, that would be excellent if I could get a hold of his management. Anybody listening, if you know Chuck Billy's management, get in contact.
I'm gonna do it.
I know.
I'm gonna find Chuck because I've already got. I don't know if you're reading Radiant Black or not, but I've been tweeting about them giving us scratch and sniff cards for their comic, and I've made some fucking headway.
I would be scratch and sniff. I feel like I might have something from somebody from a crowdfunder I got that was scratch and sniff. That's gonna bug me.
Derek's crowning achievement. If they ever pull this off, this will be like his thing till he dies. It'll be on his tombstone. He'll tell his great grandkids.
And how is it, boy? I got you into scratch and sniff Radiant Black.
That was the best impression of me ever.
I kind of hope it happens.
That was good as the Phil and Selma one. Oh, no. Yeah. The Axl Rose one. He tried to go with AC/DC. I'm glad that didn't work.
Yeah.
Indeed. I had to have a conversation with a guy I used to work with. He wanted to try to tell me that AC/DC was the greatest rock band that ever lived, and I was like, okay. And that was pretty much the whole conversation because I wasn't really willing to entertain it, especially.
I love their one drum beat. That's my favorite.
That's what one guy, and I remember early days of me playing drums, and a kid was like, "Ah, my favorite drummer is whatever his name is from AC/DC. I don't even remember because who cares?" And he was like, "I was like 14, and I'm like, they do the same drum beat every song. What are you talking about?"
It's and Phil Rudd, for your information, and he's in jail because he tried to murder his wife.
All I know is this guy. Hey, that was like what's his face from As I Lay Dying?
Yeah, and fun fact, they both happened around the same time, so I wonder if they called the same contract killer.
Called the same crappy hitman.
Should have done the whole switcheroo. So that's all classic.
Really strange.
They both called the same cop.
I need you to murder my wife. Who are you?
Phil Rudd.
Oh! Ooh, I'm telling. Phil Rudd, you can't kill your wife. You're famous.
I'm the drummer of AC/DC.
Yeah, I'm the drummer for AC/DC. Nobody knows my name. Somebody's like, Phil Rudd, you mean that guy from Ant-Man?
The same dude, that's right.
That's like wondering who the bassist is for AC/DC. Who the fuck's Cliff Williams? The only Cliff I acknowledge is Burton.
Yeah.
Cliffs of Dover is probably the one I know.
It's not like I hate AC/DC or anything. Just am like, cool. I like if it comes on the radio, I don't turn it off, but it's like, meh.
I mean, the only reason that I can say that AC/DC could potentially be the best band ever is like the only band / person who has outsold them is Michael Jackson. But money isn't everything.
Yeah, it's definitely not. Aside from their vocals and their guitar stuff, come on. What did they do that nobody else was doing? Oh, yeah. What they did that nobody else was doing was all their songs are weirdly about sex and genitals in, like, a funny way. But very few people were doing that at the time. So, you know, whatever.
Oh, my God. I like to tell the story when I used to listen to Hell's Bells when I was a kid. Like, of course, I'm, like, fucking 3 or 4 years old, and I have no idea what's going on. But I know it fucking rips. And also, when I was a kid, I used to envision the bell, like, I thought it was, like, a giant-ass grandfather clock. Like, that's what I pictured in my head. And I was, like, the whole time, for the longest time, I thought the song was about fucking clocks.
I do want to just point out real quick, Derek, I'm going to challenge you on something you said, even though I have no research to do so. I'm just going to wing it. I'm pretty sure bands that have outsold AC/DC would include the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, probably Pink Floyd.
He's talking albums. And
yeah, I'm talking albums.
Oh, for total quantity of albums?
Yeah.
All right, never mind.
Yeah. Well, Back in Black is the number 2 best-selling album of all time, right after Thriller.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Listen, I gave a whole ass 3-minute speech about this in college, and I was very adamant about it. I was so fucking exalted about it. My professor was like, Derek, are you okay? Yes, I'm fucking fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Rip Blonde Scott.
Yeah. There you go. Well, that just goes to show you what's popular is not always right. LOL.
You're talking about the Beatles, right?
Yeah, sure. If you get a decade and a half earlier in time, I would say that the odds are they were more influential slightly. But hey, whatever.
They're not more influential than the fucking Weekly Pools, because everybody listening to this is going to go fucking back Jack Irons issue 4 on Indiegogo.
Yeah.
Yes, pre-launch is up right now. And if you folks want to continue finding the links, everything to connect with us, ironversecomics.com has all that. So hope to hear from you.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Jack Irons is a Weekly Pools favorite, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Any last words before we go?
I'm just grateful for your audience for taking the time to listen to my jabbering. I'm always, honestly, you guys as well. Thank you for listening to my jabbering. I appreciate you folks, what you do for indie comics. Thank you so much for providing me this platform and for sharing your love and passion for comics, in particular, again, indie comics, because again, there's so much content there, and it's so easy for it to get overlooked. I think it is 46 Batman titles either this month or next month, something like that, that's coming out in 1 month. So, the shelves are not giving the variety and the the passion and the creativity that is actually in comics. And people need to know about that because it's changed my life, knowing that there was a medium that I could get these crazy ideas down and out there. I mean, it saved my life, if I'm 100% honest. And it's an incredible thing to share and enjoy, and I'm just grateful to do so.
Oh, man. You hear that, guys? Jack fucking Irons, the Ironverse Comics, Indiegogo coming soon for issue number 4, Ironverse.com. Jack Irons, the Steel Cowboy. Hopefully, we're going to see him in an LCS soon. But until then, crowdfund the fuck out of this.
Yeah, buy 1-3 now. Do it.
Do it. Digital for issue number 3 just went up. I mean, all of our digitals are $1 a piece. If you have any interest, there's no reason not to. You can read the first issue and most of the second issue for free on globalcomics.com. I've tried to remove as many barriers as possible for folks to actually be able to look at this thing. Because I have that much faith in it. I think if you look at it, you will enjoy it if it's your alley. I've never heard anybody say anything, but the execution on the writing wasn't exactly what they wanted from what they saw. But I've never heard anything bad. Okay. Just like, well, this is how I would have done this. But it's still really good. So
goodbye, Jack Irons. Goodbye. This is a killer comic.
Yeet.